is hauling fresh produce, the best of the season, from meat and game to fruits and vegetables, herbs and spices. Have you ever seen 27 varieties of olives in as many barrels? Market day is a tradition dating back centuries, since before France was Gaul. Why does it persist in the 21st century, even as French conglomerates have erected hypermarchés, supermarkets that could rival any American ones in size? Why do people of all walks of life brave the cold and heat, rain or shine, to choose among 3 varieties of string beans, 7 types of potatoes, various shapes of bread, quail eggs, organic hens, wild boar, 43 varieties of cheese, untold numbers of herbs, fish, and of course fresh-cut flowers? The term artisanal, lately creeping into American restaurants and markets, provides a clue. Handcrafted quality has always been at the heart of French gastronomy and culture. French women live by it. It encompasses handling as well as production. Eggs that are hours, not months, old. The yolks not pale yellow, but orange and exploding with flavor. It means white peaches picked early that morning, oozing with juices, and destined to live at peak intensity for but a day before slowly dying. Faire son marché, to do one's food shopping, remains a vital French institution, here to stay despite the proliferation of the hypermarkets, now mercifully limited by law. It's a vital social occasion. We see our neighbors, compare notes, and, crucially, get to know the producers, the farmers who come to recognize you and whom you learn to trust. It's critically important, because in France, one does not dare squeeze the merchandise. Rather, the trusted purveyors pick among the produce for you, according to when you plan to eat something, how, and with what. This discussion can go on a bit, and the next in line waits quite patiently, respecting the seriousness of her neighbor's business. I was at a fruit stand in the Marché Saint-Germain, planning meals to follow Edward's imminent arrival from New York. Like a trained psychoanalyst, a wonderful vendor there probed me. C'est pour ce soir? Is it for tonight? Yes, the white peaches are, but the yellow ones are for tomorrow night. She looked and picked thoughtfully. I usually buy what I need for the same evening, but I knew I'd be at the office that day past market time, and I wanted to treat Edward to a melon de cavaillon, one of his favorite French fruits, for his first lunch in Paris on Saturday. As I turned to the melon bushel, she inquired, C'est pour quand? I told her and she went to work, weighing a few, considering the stems and scents. Then, having narrowed it down to 2, she finally said with a smile of certainty, Dans ce cas, c'est celui-ci. She presented the one in her right hand, having calculated that the one in her left wouldn't be perfect until Sunday. Of course, one never stores fruit in the refrigerator, so I left her selection in the basket on the kitchen counter and forgot about it. On Saturday morning, excited with anticipation of Edward's arrival, I awoke to the most intoxicating fragrance permeating the apartment. The melon was crying, "Eat me," and when Edward showed up from the airport, there was no way to keep it a surprise. He just said, "Wow," as he passed the kitchen. If my market visits in New York are not quite as intense as those in Paris or Provence, they are still rich experiences in meeting and greeting produce and people. One can see and taste what's in season and learn how to prepare the season's local best with respect. Farmers universally love to share recipes, and Americans, being a curious and friendly bunch, are naturally unafraid to ask what to do with one foodstuff or another, be it skate, zucchini flowers, sorrel, or shallots. Here, you are at an advantage. Sometimes French pride and fear of seeming ignorant restrain us, but one should never be discreet where food information is concerned. Today, the thrill of outdoor markets is sweeping American cities, from San Francisco to Santa Monica, Seattle, Chicago, Boston, and beyond. Chances are there's one near you. New York's nationally famous Union Square Market is open 4 days a week. Naturally, the countryside is no less rich in opportunity. And far from dying out, the traditional farm stand is thriving, from Long Island to Pennsylvania to California to Wisconsin. Once you've bought fruit and vegetables in an open-air market, not to mention bread, eggs, chicken, and fish, it's hard to face the supermarket as anything more than a dry goods store. Obviously, you must learn the market's rhythm. In France, we are spoiled by daily markets, but there are weekly ones as well. In Provence, for instance, the famous daily ones are in the cities of Nice, Aix, and Avignon, while among smaller towns, a weekly one rotates. So, if it's Tuesday, it's Vaison-la-Romaine. The next day will be Carpentras. After that, Menherbe, Saint-Rémy-de-Provence, Uzé, and so on. Keeping track of when and where to go isn't a bother. It's almost a sport we enjoy. The effort is repaid tenfold in the kitchen. The best cook in the world can't make good food from poor ingredients. And it takes some perverse genius to turn great ingredients into bad food. Good food in season responds best to the simplest preparation. You really can't go wrong when you start with quality. The last 20 years have seen astonishing strides in American cooking, with a heartwarming new respect for cuisine du terroir, bringing the best of the earth onto the restaurant and home kitchen table. American apostles of this faith, like Alice Waters, were the first to get Americans thinking seriously about ingredients and markets, and there is nothing short of a revolution underway as more and more Americans are converted to the satisfactions of making it themselves. One difference between America and France remains a bit of a paradox. America, the paragon of egalitarian values, somehow suffers from a gastronomic class system unknown in France. The right and the opportunity to enjoy the earth's seasonal best seems to be monopolized by an elite. Outside their ranks, the great majority of Americans are conditioned to demand and accept bland, processed, chemically treated, generally unnatural foods, which through packaging and marketing have been made to seem wholesome. I have no doubt that any people made to eat this way would in time grow fat. Among the French, by contrast, a love of good natural food is part of the universal patrimony. Not that the French don't pay more for quality. On average, they spend a much greater proportion of their income on food. But what seems like a luxury to Americans is a necessity to the French. Of course, not all luxury is within reach of everyone. The beluga appetizer is not a universal right. But the French do live by one principle that Americans sometimes forget, despite having coined it most eloquently: garbage in, garbage out. The key to cooking, and therefore living well, is the best of ingredients. Part of living like a French woman, then, will mean searching out and paying a bit more for quality, whether at the open-air market or at least a good grocery shop with market suppliers. This is now within the means of a great many more American women. French women live on budgets, too, but they also understand the value of quality over quantity. Another issue, of course, is availability. And though the market in America has yet to become what it is in France, only a few are beyond the reach of quality on account of where people live. New markets and specialty food shops are cropping up everywhere across the country, especially with a surging demand for organically grown produce. One must take the trouble to find them. And thanks to the internet, many quality foods not in driving, or better, walking distance, are but a mouse click away. Seasonings. In any French market, you'll find pots and pots of fresh herbs, as well as rows and rows of dried herbs and spices. In cities and towns, grocery shops, épiceries, stock a decent range of spices. Though French food is hardly known for being spicy, French women could not do without seasonings. Artfully deployed, they are key to blissfully fooling ourselves, furnishing a world of flavors in recipes that might otherwise depend on fat for their tastiness. As you play with herbs and spices, keep in mind that the latter are by nature more pungent. Strive to become an adventurous seasoner, but learn your boldness peu à peu. A little turmeric goes far, and you can always add, but never subtract. The most common herbs in French cuisine are parsley, sweet basil, tarragon, thyme, lemon thyme, chervil, marjoram, oregano, rosemary, used in soups, meat, poultry, fish, vegetables, and salads, and sage, not typically used with fish and salads, but great with meat and mushrooms. We chop them at the last second to enjoy maximum flavor. As for spices, we favor paprika, cayenne pepper, and increasingly curry and ginger, especially with poultry, meats, and vegetables. Of course, cinnamon and nutmeg are used mostly for desserts, but try, for example, a slight sprinkle of cinnamon on lamb, whether stewed or broiled, or add a dash of nutmeg to a chicken dish with cream, or on veggies such as carrots, green beans, squash, or spinach. The unexpected can be the greatest delight. The Alsace-born chef, Jean-Georges Fongerichten, caused a stir in New York when he flavored ice cream with ground pepper. Mustard is a most versatile condiment. Invest in top quality. We French like Dijon, Pommery, and Meaux, each of which has a number of producers of varying quality. Adding some to a cream soup, a hamburger, a nice alternative to ketchup, cheese and egg dishes, sandwiches, instead of or even more luxurious than mayonnaise, salad dressing, a fish sauce, or any casserole lends an extra note and complexity. Fresh herbs like basil, mint, and rosemary are ideal for summer cooking, whereas in fall and winter, dried herbs with spices will furnish the best accent for everything from lamb to fruit compote. Spices facilitate digestion of heavier foods and strengthen our immune system, which is challenged more severely in winter. So we use them more generously in the cold months. Both herbs and spices can also help you cut back on salt, which promotes water retention and temporary weight gain. Even the fleeting impression of added pounds can be dispiriting when we mean to reduce. As you might expect, the quality of one's seasonings is très important. That's why the French use mills for both pepper and salt, grinding these staples at the last second to release fresh flavors the moment they are needed. Sea salt, much more intense than the standard iodized table variety, makes a world of taste difference. And did you know there are at least a dozen varieties of peppercorns? Nowadays, you can grow your own herb garden with no trouble. Savvy entrepreneurs have even created instant gardens. Just add water, and in a couple of weeks you have a tabletop farm. Learn by doing. In the city, I grow varieties of parsley, thyme, rosemary, mint, chives, and basil in my window box from late spring till early fall, when I bring them inside to a sunny area. Basil doesn't respond well to life indoors, so at the end of the summer, I flatten and freeze individual leaves and also make a good supply of pesto. This I freeze in ice cube trays. I seal the individual frozen cubes in separate airtight packages that come in handy on cold December nights when one provides ample instant sauce for one pasta serving. Personally, I have a huge fondness for rosemary, with its pungent aroma and distinctive taste. I use it both fresh and dried as my preferred herb with lamb, Cornish hen, or any type of poultry. I was introduced to rosemary as a teenager vacationing in Provence. One of my relatives kept a pot in her bedroom because she believed the aroma was stimulating, cleansing, and comforting. Others also report this soothing effect on the nervous system. If you hold a sprig under your nose, you'll see what these Provençals are talking about. Try a range of seasonings, and soon you'll learn which appeal to you most. Keep these in stock, but always remain open to new combinations of flavors. A few basic dishes can be varied dramatically by changing the way you season them. I have given examples of this in the next chapter. Just remember that here, too, less is more. When you've learned to taste your food with care, you'll find yourself noticing the interplay of ingredients as never before. The more flavors you train yourself to register, the more complex your appreciation of taste will become. And a well-trained palate is quicker to reach contentment. Keeping your mind interested in what you're eating is fundamental to eating less and losing weight. Nuts. We toss nuts in salads all the time, and certainly sprinkle them on fish and even meats. We add them to pasta and crumble them over yogurt, cake, or ice cream. We extract from them fragrant oils that make a lovely alternative to the sacred huile d'olive. Supremely nutritious, they can be a delicious and healthy accent in many a dish and presentation, making it considerably more substantial because of their concentration of good fats. But did you know nuts are seasonal? If you have ever eaten fresh hazelnuts or almonds, you understand. It's perfectly reasonable when you remember they are fruits that grow on trees and bushes. I'm unapologetically nuts about nuts, and my favorite varieties are hazelnuts, walnuts, and almonds. Part of the attraction comes, I must admit, from having been spoiled as a child. Our garden had a few hazelnut, noisette trees, which resemble large bushes, and a huge walnut, noix tree. And there were also rows of hazelnut trees behind my grandmother's home in Alsace. There's nothing like cracking a freshly fallen nut. The thin, brown envelope is so supple, it surrenders the sweet white meat without a fight. The smell and taste are indescribable, as far from a bag of airplane nuts as a fine saucisson is from a Slim Jim. Years later, visiting friends in Greece, I would experience fresh almonds, even more delicate, and with a most sensual touch of sweetness. When I returned to France, I put up a poster of Bonnard's L'Amandier en Fleur in my room to remind me of that experience. At home in the fall, we always had a bowl of fresh nuts, and after the Sunday meal, we would pass it around just before coffee. We kids loved to crack them open. Storing them uncracked preserves flavor and helps you enjoy fewer, making you work for the calories. Mummy would pack handfuls in tiny brown bags to be eaten during the 10 a.m. recess in the schoolyard. Our nounou, nanny, Yvette, a sweet young lady who was practically adopted by our family, claimed this and other good foods were the secret to our excellent grades. A small handful of unsalted raw nuts is still one of my favorite snacks, sometimes part of lunch, and an emergency travel food, the en cas, often including a few pieces of dried fruit, especially apricots, that I keep in my pocketbook for the departure lounge. Nuts are rich in beneficial monounsaturated fat, as well as good sources of vitamin E, folate, potassium, magnesium, zinc, and other minerals essential to health. Many people think of nuts as a high-calorie, high-fat food, which is true, so practice moderation. Those 6 or 8 nuts, about 1 ounce, are the equivalent of, say, 2 ounces of chicken, but are far richer in vital nutrients. Have a small handful and reap the healthful benefits. Savor them one by one. Most of what we find in shops is typically months old and sometimes rancid. On airplanes or in lounges, the offerings are hardly any better, often heavy on the salt to cover staleness. Securing nuts at their prime can be an adventure in quality. After I moved to New York, I still regularly visited my parents in France, and my mother remained my key supplier. I always had a big bag of hazelnuts to take back home to New York. One year, I was preparing the Thanksgiving meal and had a wonderful recipe for pumpkin pie requiring a base of pecans. I didn't have any and decided to substitute my fresh hazelnuts. To this day, Edward, who loves pumpkin pie, claims this is the best he's ever had. Another lesson in the pleasures of serendipity. Now I order my hazelnuts from Oregon right after harvest and find them closest to what I grew up eating. If you can't get freshly picked, at least make sure they are not stale. Health food stores tend to have the best retail turnover. You should store them in an airtight jar away from the light, and please, not in the refrigerator. Pumpkin pie with hazelnuts. Serves 10. Ingredients. Pie crust. 2/3 cup unsifted flour. Pinch of salt. 1 tablespoon sugar. 6 tablespoons chilled butter. 1.5 tablespoons ice-cold water. Filling. 1/3 cup ground hazelnuts. 1/4 cup granulated brown sugar. 2 tablespoons softened butter. 2 eggs plus 1 egg yolk. 1 cup unsweetened canned pumpkin puree, organic, natural preferred. 1 tablespoon flour. 2/3 cup granulated brown sugar. 1/4 teaspoon cinnamon. 1/4 teaspoon ground cloves. 1/2 teaspoon salt. 1 cup heavy cream. 1. Put the flour, pinch of salt, and sugar in the bowl of a food processor and pulse to combine. 2. Cut the chilled butter into small pieces and add to the bowl. Also, add the water and process for 15 seconds. If the dough is too dry, add more water by droplets. The dough should just hold together. Do not knead. 3. Wrap the dough in waxed paper and refrigerate at least 4 hours or overnight. 4. Preheat the oven to 400 degrees. Roll out the pastry and fit it into a 9-inch pie plate, 2 inches deep. Prick the pastry with a fork all over the bottom. Line the pie plate with aluminum foil. Add pie weights or dried beans to weigh down the dough and bake for 10 minutes in the preheated oven. Remove from the oven and discard foil and beans. 5. Increase the oven temperature to 450 degrees. Prepare the filling by combining hazelnuts, 1/4 cup granulated brown sugar, and butter. Work into a paste and spread with the back of a fork or a rubber spatula into the partially cooked pastry shell. Bake for 10 minutes. 6. Mix together the eggs, egg yolk, pumpkin puree, flour, 2/3 cup granulated brown sugar, spices, salt, and heavy cream. Pour into the pastry shell. Turn the oven temperature down to 325 degrees and bake the pie for 45 minutes. 7. Serve at room temperature or cold. Optional, serve with unsweetened whipped cream, 1 cup for the entire pie, on the side. The pie will keep a few days in the refrigerator. Always take out 15 minutes before serving. Other fruits. Growing up French means eating lots of fruit. In season, that is. We certainly did in my family. Our garden had rows and rows of strawberries, one huge cherry tree covered with the big, juicy, two-color variety, and a small one bearing sour cherries. Raspberry and blackberry bushes grew like weeds along the stone walls and near the walnut and hazelnut trees. And in various parcels, there were jumbles of rhubarb, onions, leeks, tomatoes, and carrots, with other fruit bushes of grosset, red currants, and larger varieties, like maquereau, destined mostly for jellies and jams. Every year before the end of school, I would be allowed to have a party around the big cherry tree. With our gardener on hand as lifeguard, my friends and I would take turns climbing. I had an advantage, being the most practiced, but a few brave others would join me on the high limbs to pick cherries we would throw down to the less bold. By the end, all our mouths were stained shades of red and purple. The part I sometimes repress is that year after year there was always one who would overdo it, paying dearly afterward with un petit mal d'estomac. Moderation is best learned early. Strawberry season meant a strawberry cure. They were, then as now, my favorite fruit, and for about 6 weeks we would have them almost every day for dessert, picking them literally minutes before eating them. My father was obsessive with his crops, and in springtime we'd all pitch in, laying some straw on the ground between the bunches, so that when the green berries had bloomed and soaked in enough sun to ripen, they would rest on the straw, not the soil, allowing us to eat them unwashed. It was a primal pleasure that at first shocked my American husband with his heightened sense of hygiene, but he got used to it and never had a stomachache. 6 weeks of even one's favorite might have seemed monotonous were it not for the great range of variations. Monday was the day when Mother had the least time to be fancy, so at lunch we would have them plain, picking from a big bowl in the middle of the table. Most other days, we would have fraise à la crème, something one does not get in restaurants. My mother would gently mash the ripe strawberries with a fork, allowing the scarlet juices to flow. After adding a little sugar, she would let the mixture rest at room temperature until lunchtime. By then, the aroma was calling to us irresistibly, and mixing in just a dab of crème fraîche was enough to obtain a luscious, light pink soup. The very thought makes my mouth water. If we served it on the tiny white dessert plates with the gold border, a trick for making small portions look larger, it was possible to have seconds and feel richly satisfied. Sundays were pie days, and my mother would make a tarte aux fraises. After selecting a basket of perfect specimens, all of similar size, she would bake a delicious pâté brisé or pâté sablé, let it cool, and align the raw strawberry tips to point upward. With a strawberry coulis to glaze them and crème chantilly, whipped cream, on the side, this was prettier than anything you could see in the fanciest pastry shop and utterly delicious with far fewer calories. In wintertime, she'd follow the same recipe with the sour cherries, and we absolutely loved the tartness of the pie. What we loved less was the picking, pitting, and preserving in sterilized glass jars that we all had to assist in on summer Sunday evenings, although Mother was always quick to remind us how we would love the cherry pies in winter when there was not much fresh fruit around. Fruit is one of those rare foods whose enjoyment out of season is an art in itself, and few know their preserves as French women do. Mamie also had a few sour cherry variations. Raw, only the women in the family loved them that way. In pies, or best of all, for those fancy Sunday lunches when she would make Dad's favorite dessert, baba au rhum. Instead of soaking the cake with a lot of rum, she would use the juice from the preserved cherries, adding just a dash of rum to moisten the baba. Before serving, she would pour the cherries from the vacuum-sealed glass jar into the hole of the large baked baba, then top it with whipped cream. This was a rare treat, not usually made at home, and always requested by our guests, who were the only ones allowed a second serving. Raspberries and mulberries were mostly eaten plain in season, but we had so many that Mother would always freeze some, a preserving method that fails miserably with strawberries, adding to their mystique, but works well with most other berries. For one of our favorite winter desserts, usually enjoyed on Sundays, Mother would make a vanilla pudding topped with the berries, their juices flowing down the shimmering sides, not only lovely to behold, but uniquely delicious, with the thick but subtle flavor of the pudding, just slightly sweetened, contrasting with the soft mushiness of the defrosted berries and the perfumed coulis. As for other berries, in Alsace they abounded in nature beyond our garden wall. With a big wooden stick she used as a cane for forest walks, my grandmother would lead the family on expeditions. In the woods behind her house was the most incredible field of myrtille, wild blueberry bushes, her secret garden. We were each charged with filling a little container, but I would fall behind trying to fill my mouth as well. My grandmother needed a lot of myrtille to make a pie, as these tiny fruits have nothing to do with the marble-sized berries we find in the United States. They are also noticeably tastier, at once sweet and sour, but also somewhat spicy. Sometimes, by the end, my father would have to help me meet my quota, sharing some of his pickings. I remember trying to describe myrtille to Edward. He couldn't quite get it until he had an epiphany a few years later at l'Auberge de Lille, a gastronomic shrine in Alsace, where, for dessert, they served the first tarte aux myrtilles of the season. I wish I had a picture of his face at that moment. In most of the world, summer means peaches and melons, followed by pears, and into the fall, apples. In France, we seem to have an obsession for following the varieties of plums that appear from late summer into the fall. Indeed, we consume about 40 million pounds per year. Back home, the season would start at the very end of summer with La Mirabelle, a variety unique to eastern France. It's a small, round, juicy, sweet little yellow thing, the size of a cherry tomato, with a subtle perfume close to vanilla and honey. We use it in tarts, sauces, like applesauce, preserves, sorbets, and alcool blanc, the clear, fiery, distilled spirits my grandfather would drink after a big meal to facilitate digestion. We are so serious about these plums that there is such a thing as la fête de la Mirabelle. A queen is chosen and paraded through town, followed by trucks loaded with the plums. There are organized tastings covering every manner of preparation, and competitions. My mother's was pretty good, but I must say that Tante Berthe's was the best, which is why she would never reveal the recipe. I did manage, as a teenager, to catch her in the act of preparation, but she made me promise to keep this one en famille, so I don't include it here. A more common variety in France is la quiche, the elongated, juicy plum with a violet color and a firm flesh. In the fall, I make clafouti and tarts with them. Often labeled as Italian plums in the United States, they freeze well for winter treats. I frequently use the ones squirreled away in the freezer as an accompaniment to panna cotta, the Italian custard. The panna cotta itself takes about 5 minutes, plus 4 hours in the fridge to set, and another 5 are needed to cook the defrosted plums in a bit of butter and sprinkle them with the tiniest mixture of sugar and cinnamon to complement the custard's flavor and texture. Finally, there is the variety I eat all year long as part of my personal wellness program. Called La Prune d'Onte, it is a violet plum used in southwestern France to make the famous pruneau d'Agen, or Agen prunes. Edward used to make fun of me because I still eat 2 prunes at breakfast a few times a week. It seems to him too unglamorous to be French. But prunes are packed with vitamins, and of course high in fiber, as the old jokes tell us, a mild laxative loaded with potassium, calcium, and magnesium. French women consider prunes the perfect detox food. They purify the body and help maintain a good balance in trace elements, so children should be taught to like them. They are good for everyone, not just old folks. No discussion of French fruit preferences could exclude the lemon. If you've ever taken a boisson with a French woman on a sunny cafe terrace, you know she'll often go for a citron pressé before or instead of an espresso or mineral water. It's basically the juice of a lemon, to which one adds cold or warm water. No sugar, please. You can even have it with breakfast. Half a lemon will do. We also enjoy an idea borrowed from Italy, the canarino, the zest of a fresh lemon steeped as tea. Acquiring the taste for lemon is an excellent stabilization habit. Fruit consumption is one of the most telling differences between French and American eating patterns. Too many American women eat too little, if any, and who can blame them, considering their reliance on the supermarket with its tasteless offerings, waxed and rushed unripe to the shelves? Fruit is a staple of French life, and you must make it a staple of yours. And there is no excuse, as it is the one food easily enjoyed without preparation. You simply have to know what is available and when, and what can be preserved for the off-season. Making your way once a week to where the good stuff is sold is one of the easiest ways to increase quality. If you can make it to market, you can have one of eating's greatest pleasures at your disposal. If not, oranges and grapefruits shipped fresh from Florida from late November into February are a real treat and an antidote to the paucity of local fruits during winter. Plum clafouti without dough serves 4. The classic clafouti, fruit tart, is naturally richer with batter. But as I learned from Dr. Miracle, the flourless version, properly seasoned, can give you the impression of indulgence with far fewer calories. A tiny scoop of ice cream is a good countermeasure, too. I often prepare this dessert at home when I want to compensate for the richness of an earlier course and to inject some fruit nutrients and fiber into the meal. It also provides a trick for handling not quite ripe plums. A little cooking and a dash of sugar make all the difference. The same recipe works with cherries, apples, pears, or figs. Ingredients: 12 plums, 1 tablespoon lemon juice, 1 tablespoon sugar, 1 quarter teaspoon cinnamon, 1 teaspoon butter. 1. Wash the plums and quarter them. Pour the lemon juice over and marinate for 10 minutes. 2. Mix the sugar with the cinnamon. Warm the butter in a non-stick frying pan and add the plums. Sprinkle with the sugar-cinnamon mixture. 3. Cook over low flame till just tender but not mushy. A bit al dente is best. Serve at room temperature with or without ice cream. Blueberry Baby Smoothie serves 4. This versatile, very healthy drink, especially rich in antioxidants, can be the better part of your lunch, snack, or even breakfast, though I prefer a more robust and balanced start to the day, as well as a dessert partner accompanying a cookie or warm dessert muffin. I discovered it as a child, again visiting my grandmother in Alsace, where we picked many more wild blueberries in the forests than we could possibly eat in season. Blueberries freeze extremely well. Today, I buy quarts and quarts of blueberries at the height of their season from the farmer's market for immediate freezing. Voila! Blueberries year-round. The following drink, an old-fashioned version of the modern smoothie, rien de nouveau sous le soleil, nothing new under the sun, includes a little kicker. Ingredients: 12 ounces frozen blueberries, 2 tablespoons lemon juice, 2 tablespoons honey, 2 1/4 cups 2% milk, pinch of ground cardamom. 1. Take the blueberries out of the freezer 30 minutes before using. 2. Mix the blueberries in a blender with the lemon juice, honey, and milk. Add a sprinkle of cardamom before serving. Tomatoes. The quintessential ingredient in Provençal cuisine is also known as la pomme d'amour, the apple of love. Tomatoes, as every school child knows, are fruit, and unless cooked, I recommend they be eaten in season. There is nothing I long for more in winter than a real tomato when none are to be had, but it only makes the fruit of summer all the more precious. Don't be tempted by a pretty face alone. Wait for the season. I weather the off-season with select cherry tomatoes, good ones available year-round, and limit my tomato cure to a few summer months, finding beefy New Jersey heirlooms and other excellent local varieties at the Union Square Market. But good tomatoes can be found across America throughout the summer. Plus, they are rich in vitamins A and C, and a good source of folate, potassium, and other healthful nutrients. Remember, except for the uncommon yellow variety, a nice visual variation in any tomato recipe, ripe tomatoes are brilliant red. But good color alone is not sufficient proof. If they don't smell ripe, or at all, then they aren't. Don't put them in the refrigerator, ever, if you want to experience their full and natural flavors. Leave them on your counter and wash them just before you use them. In the winter, tomato puree lends a sweet thickness to many a sauce. Tomato salad with goat cheese serves 4. Although you can find tomatoes year-round in France, too, they just aren't the same as they are in season, which runs June through September. In summer, my family used to eat tomatoes at least twice a week, but typically 3 or 4 times, in different raw preparations for full flavor. In this recipe, a bit of cheese makes for a heartier dish, which means the meat or fish portion later in the meal can be smaller or eliminated. We almost always had some fresh goat cheese from a local farm, but you can add mozzarella, as in Italy, or feta, as they do in Greece. Ingredients: mesclun or any mixed salad greens, about 1 cup per person. 4 large tomatoes, washed and sliced. Salad dressing: 2 tablespoons minced shallots, 1 teaspoon mustard, 2 tablespoons vinegar, 6 tablespoons olive oil, 8 ounces fresh goat cheese, salt and freshly ground pepper, 4 tablespoons parsley or basil, chopped at the last minute. 1. Cover each plate with a layer of mesclun or mixed greens. Place sliced tomatoes on top. Salt generously. 2. Mix the dressing ingredients into an emulsion. 3. Crumble the goat cheese onto the tomato slices. 4. Season with salt and pepper to taste. Pour the dressing on top. Add the chopped parsley. Serve with a slice of country bread. Mushrooms. No question about it, the French eat a lot more mushrooms in total quantity and variety than Americans. There's genuine excitement each fall as more and more fresh mushrooms are brought to markets. Fine restaurant menus highlight mushroom preparations, and the all-mushroom tasting menu is often featured as a treat. In agrarian and densely forested France, mushrooming was once a simple seasonal chore. Today, it's an outdoor adventure sport and popular hobby. One of the priceless charms of wild mushroom picking is the aromas of the fields and the sous-bois, forest floor. When I was a kid, we'd leave right after breakfast, the morning dew still hanging on every leaf. The smell of wet dead leaves was mysterious and captivating. To this day, I can summon it up only in tasting some red wines and old champagnes or smelling a particular type of tobacco. When we saw mushrooms we didn't know for sure to be edible, we brought them to my grandmother, who was an expert. Others sought out the pharmacist. Admittedly, only the least and the most experienced mushroom pickers ever seem to die of poisoning. The rest of us are not so bold. It's not difficult to find mushrooms year-round in America. I speak of the ones grown in moist industrial basements somewhere. You know them. White and perfect-looking, with round half-moon button tops. There are worse things you could eat than these clones. But ugly mushrooms are far tastier, and the freshly picked ones are indescribably good. Fine mushrooms are available in gourmet shops, where some can be poisonously expensive, and in outdoor markets, where they are not cheap either. But with mushrooms, you should bite the bullet of cost. Avoid the supermarket, and consider this something to splurge on when you can. Grand-mère was also expert in mushroom handling, and she taught my mother how to dry them and also to preserve them via sterilization. A good dried mushroom is better than a poor fresh one, but nothing beats a fine fresh one, and among fresh, the wild ones reign supreme. Chanterelles, also called girolles, yellow-orange, and trompette de la mort, black, were accompaniments to many dishes through the spring, particularly veal, rabbit, and game. Our favorite recipe was the simplest, fricassé de champignons sauvages. The mushrooms are cleaned without water, with only a clean dry towel and paring knife. A bit of oil and butter is put in the frying pan, and when it's sizzling hot, the mushrooms are sautéed with some very finely sliced shallots, lemon juice, parsley, and salt and pepper. That appetizer with a glass of champagne is, to my mind and palate, one of the greatest food and wine pairings. Many years later, I rediscovered that dish at Les Crayères, the top restaurant in Reims, and it reconfirmed my grandmother's unfailing intuition with wine and food. An Italian friend later shared a recipe for mushroom flan with mascarpone cheese and parmesan that is equally excellent with champagne. Mushrooms have been enjoyed for thousands of years. The ancient Chinese loved them and noted their probiotic benefits. Although we've greatly increased the farmed varieties, we still don't quite understand the mystery of perfect mushroom growth. So if you're near some meadow or forest where you can pick them, with a reliable judge of safety, consider yourself blessed. For all their satisfying taste and texture, mushrooms contain almost no fat, sugar, or salt, but are a good source of dietary fiber and are richer in proteins than most other fresh vegetables. They are filled with vitamins and minerals, especially B vitamins, but these are lost when they are cooked in boiling water, so consider eating them raw with a light oil dressing, which seems all but inconceivable with the supermarket kind. We should all consume mushrooms regularly, raw or cooked, not to mention stuffed. Salmon and other things that swim. If you were born not too long ago and live in a city, you probably think that virtually all varieties of fish are available year-round, especially salmon. You see it everywhere, now more than ever, since it has been touted as the cure for everything from heart disease to wrinkles. We've all heard that eating salmon, with its extraordinary concentration of good fats, lowers blood pressure, thins blood, dilates blood vessels, regulates the heartbeat, and fights cancer, among many other benefits. But remember those nature films of the salmon's heroic swim upstream to spawn in the spring, most dying in the attempt? Real salmon is seasonal food. To meet the skyrocketing year-round demand, the bulk of salmon today comes from huge farms that create awful environmental pressures, as well as salmon relatively poor in the nutrients that cause the fish to be declared a wonder food. I've been salmon fishing in Alaska and eaten my catch for lunch. There's no comparison between the color and taste of what is passing for salmon and wild native salmon, which in most parts of the country is now about twice as expensive. This is just supply and demand. There isn't enough good salmon to go around. But more is unquestionably less where salmon is concerned. Although it loses some taste and texture, you are better off buying frozen wild salmon, Alaskan variety, or in any case, Pacific, available most abundantly in late spring in the northern hemisphere, but in lesser quantities elsewhere during the year, especially as the wild varieties swim the oceans far and wide, than buying farmed. There's nary a restaurant in France without salmon in some form. In pre-farm days, it came from Norway or Scotland, still the European gourmet's choice. The most common of all presentations is saumon fumé, smoked salmon, perfect as an appetizer at dinner parties or cocktails because there is no preparation. Smoked salmon on toast with a glass of champagne is a classic. The oiliness and saltiness of salmon works marvels with the acidity of champagne. Salmon is so versatile, it lends itself to every taste. Pair a few ounces of the good stuff, smoked, raw, or cooked, served warm or cold, with potatoes, rice, leeks, fennel, any of your favorite vegetables. Salmon is flattered by dill, basil, cumin, capers, lemon, and many other accents. Try salmon with sorrel sauce, a simple but elegant dish to make at home. But for simplicity, nothing beats saumon à l'unilatéral, which I always serve in a pinch, because it takes exactly 6 minutes to prepare. My Uncle Charles owned a spa hotel, and in the early days of Nouvelle Cuisine, he taught me the simple, foolproof ways of eating light but tasty. He used to prepare this dish for his more ambivalent guests. They were paying for a cure, but had an inclination to indulge because of a vacation mindset. It's a useful lesson. No one wants to pay for deprivation. This incredibly simple and healthy dish was a good solution, he felt, for those who insisted on ending meals with l'omelette norvégienne, just about the richest ice cream dessert in all of France. Saumon à l'unilatéral, cooked on one side only, serves four. Ingredients: 4 pieces of wild salmon, about 4 ounces each, 1 tablespoon fresh lemon juice, 1/2 teaspoon coarse salt. 1. Heat a non-stick frying pan. Place the salmon in the pan, skin side down. Pour the lemon juice over the salmon, add the salt, and cook for about 6 minutes over medium heat until the skin is crispy. Cut a slice to determine the degree of cooking you desire, such as medium rare, pink at the center, which preserves most of the natural taste. 2. Serve immediately. Season, if you like, with a dash of extra virgin olive oil and a sprig of fresh thyme. When there isn't salmon, there's something else. Each weekend, I visit the fish stall at the Union Square Market and buy skate or tuna that is only hours out of the water. Top New York chefs come here or go directly to the wholesale fish market. Admittedly, the fish market, and every port city has one, is not a stroll in the botanical gardens. Few non-professionals will have the time or inclination, but try it once to see the difference. For one thing, fresh fish does not smell fishy. Its flesh does not look shellacked. If you can tell quality, it's possible to find it at a good grocery store. It saves time. Good fish is the simplest thing in the world to cook. Coquillage, oysters, and more. I love sea scallops. Those sweet, nutty, fleshy medallions that have a normal season from perhaps late October or early November through March. That's the only time most restaurants in Brittany, France's seafood mecca, will serve them. Scallops are especially popular at year's end, as I was reminded at my favorite Paris bistro, Beignois, one November. It's one of those places where everything's comme il faut. But nevertheless, I asked the seasoned waiter, "What's good today?" "Madame," he replied, as though pained for me, "the scallops, of course." He was right. Oysters are another singular eating experience. Not nearly as expensive as, say, caviar, but somehow they speak of the utmost sophistication in the 21st century. In the 19th, they were inexpensive, common, and a bit proletarian. And what could be easier to serve? It was Escoffier, the legendary Parisian chef, who at the turn of the 20th century introduced the practice of serving them over a bed of crushed ice, with their half-shells as little bowls for the delicious salty juices. A quick squeeze of lemon and a few twists of pepper wonderfully complement the natural flavor. And though oysters are an acquired taste, once you try them, you might find yourself hooked on the sensation of that tender, grayish glob of seagoing goodness sliding down your throat. Not for nothing do hedonists pair oyster eating with seduction. And some will add that the true sensual delight is enhanced by watching another savor them with you. My husband likes to tell a story of our first trip to discover Brittany early in our marriage. For him, that meant the landscape, the sea, the similarities with England, the architecture, the history. I was interested in those things, too, but frankly, I was more eager to experience Brittany's mussels, oysters, crepes, and wondrous variety of cookies. We headed first to a beautiful little auberge near the sea to visit the oyster beds. A little shack nearby served them by the dozen, and though it was early for lunch, we had to have some. We sat there alone, ordered, and the next thing I can remember is Edward laughing out loud. Gazing into the platter set before us, I had totally lost awareness of being there with someone else, entranced by the smell of seawater and of its precious fruit. As I concentrated on swallowing these firm little morsels, Edward said he had never seen anyone experience oysters that way, and it was only our second dozen. The next day, I showed him how we eat mussels. No fork necessary. Just use your first two half-empty shells and scoop out the meat of each mussel. With a glass or two of muscadet, we had fabulous lunches, low in calories, high in minerals and vitamins. Oysters, too, can be the main element of a surprisingly balanced meal, containing protein, carbohydrates, and just a little fat, to say nothing of the wealth of vitamins and minerals. I'm always amazed that half a dozen oysters are only 60 or 70 calories. Like a great love, they give a lot back, always new, never boring. When we are in Paris, places like Le Dôme that serve them brilliantly have become our cafeteria. And now, more than ever, there are wondrous varieties of oysters to be found in raw bars across America. Thanks to good cultivation practices filling steady but not exploding demand, the season is rather long, virtually year-round, but at its peak in the fall and winter. The rule about the months ending with R comes from the days before refrigeration. Nevertheless, be careful during the summer months. We French count oysters as one of our year-end rituals. Visit a French market at Christmas, and especially on New Year's Eve, and you'll see crate after crate awaiting indulgent mouths across the country. Putting it all together. Seasonal menu planning becomes easy once you learn what's best when and pair it with your favorite flavors. Following are some examples of menus that are particularly good for stabilization. When you're beyond that, you can substitute richer elements. For instance, clafoutis made with dough. Spring menu du jour. Breakfast. Yogurt. Cereal with strawberries. Slice of whole wheat or multigrain bread. Coffee or tea. Lunch. Asparagus flan. Recipe to follow. Green salad. Cherry clafoutis without dough. See recipe for plum clafoutis. Non-caloric beverage. Dinner. Pea soup. Grilled spring lamb chops. Recipe to follow. Cauliflower gratin. Recipe to follow. Rhubarb compote. Glass of red wine. Asparagus flan. Serves 4. Ingredients. 16 asparagus stalks. 4 ounces bacon, coarsely chopped. 8 eggs. 2 cups milk. 1 cup heavy cream. 8 sprigs of fresh chervil, minced. Salt and freshly ground pepper. 1. Cut off the tough ends of the asparagus stalks, about 2 inches. Peel the asparagus. Boil the asparagus in salted water for 5 minutes. Drain and let cool. Chop each stalk into 2 or 3 inch pieces. 2. Sauté the bacon in a non-stick frying pan till crisp. Drain on a paper towel. 3. Combine the eggs, milk, cream, and half of the chervil. Season with salt and pepper. Preheat the oven to 350 degrees. Pour the egg mixture in a 9-inch pie plate, 2 inches deep. Sprinkle in the asparagus and bacon. Bake for 15 to 20 minutes, till the custard is set but not dried out. Serve immediately, decorated with the rest of the chervil. If you don't want to use bacon, you can replace it with crab meat, fresh or canned. Parsley or chives can be used as alternatives to chervil. Grilled spring lamb chops. Serves 4. Ingredients. 8 spring lamb chops. 4 tablespoons olive oil. 1 tablespoon Dijon mustard. 4 medium shallots. 1 cup fresh mint. Salt and freshly ground pepper. 1. Lay the chops in a baking dish. 2. Combine the olive oil, mustard, shallots, and mint in the bowl of a food processor and pulse till a medium-textured paste is formed. Spread the minty paste on each side of the chops, season them with salt and pepper, and let marinate at room temperature for 30 minutes. 3. Broil or grill the chops 3 minutes on each side for medium-rare meat. Serve immediately. Cauliflower gratin. Serves 4. Ingredients. 1 medium-sized head of cauliflower. 2 cups milk. 1/2 teaspoon salt. 1 egg. 1/2 cup grated cheese. Gruyère, Swiss, Jarlsberg, Comté, Parmesan, or Pecorino, or a mix of 2. 1 tablespoon butter. Salt and freshly ground pepper. 1. Trim the cauliflower. Separate the flowerettes and cook in the milk and the 1/2 teaspoon of salt until tender, 10 to 15 minutes. Drain, reserving 1/3 cup of the milk. 2. Arrange the cooked flowerettes in a lightly buttered baking dish. Beat together the egg and reserved milk. Add the cheese and spread over the flowerettes. Add salt and pepper. Dot with the butter. 3. Broil the gratin until browned and bubbly. Serve hot. Summer menu du jour. Breakfast. Sliver of cheese. 1/2 cup muesli with blueberries. Coffee or tea. Lunch. Bacon, lettuce, and tomato sandwich. Cup of raspberries. Non-caloric beverage. Dinner. Grilled chicken with rosemary. Recipe to follow. Fennel gratin. Arugula salad. Grilled peaches with lemon thyme, recipe to follow, glass of white or red wine. Grilled chicken with rosemary, serves 4. Ingredients, 4 chicken breasts with skin and bones, juice of 1 lemon, 4 tablespoons olive oil, 4 garlic cloves, finely minced, fresh rosemary sprigs, salt and freshly ground pepper. 1. Place the chicken breasts in a baking dish skin side up. Mix together the lemon juice, olive oil, garlic and rosemary sprigs and pour over chicken. Season with salt and pepper. You can also do this in 5 minutes in the morning. Cover with plastic wrap and marinate at least 2 hours in refrigerator. 2. Bring the chicken to room temperature before grilling, skin side up, for 15 minutes, and then skin side down for 20 minutes. Grilled peaches with lemon thyme. Serves 4. Peaches are such a delicate fruit, it's difficult, even in season, to find specimens perfect for eating raw. For this dessert, it does not matter. Even hard ones will do, as the cooking will tenderize and release juices and flavors. Ingredients: 4 peaches, 2 tablespoons olive oil, 1 teaspoon honey, 1 quarter teaspoon pure vanilla extract, 4 sprigs lemon thyme, coarsely chopped. 1. Rinse the peaches, pat dry, cut in half and remove the pits. Place the peach halves in a baking dish. Mix together the olive oil, honey, and vanilla extract and pour over the peaches. Sprinkle with the lemon thyme. Marinate for 20 minutes, turning over once and basting. 2. Broil or grill the marinated peaches on the barbecue for 2 to 3 minutes on each side, or until the peaches are tender but not soft. Serve immediately, alone or with a scoop of vanilla ice cream. Fall menu du jour. Breakfast. Half grapefruit. Egg omelet with mixed herbs and ricotta cheese. Recipe to follow. Slice of bread. Whole wheat, multigrain, sourdough. Coffee or tea. Lunch. Lentil soup. Recipe to follow. Caesar salad. Plums. Non-caloric beverage. Dinner. Halibut en papillote. Recipe to follow. Mushroom timbale. Cooked pears with cinnamon. Recipe to follow. Glass of champagne or white wine. Egg omelet with mixed herbs and ricotta cheese. Serves 4. I find this a wonderful weekend breakfast, especially when you have guests. It's a filling main dish, preceded by some fruit and bread, and it can be prepared just before you sit down and served with a variety of breads. Whole wheat, seven grain, and sourdough make for a good combination and accompaniment to the herbs and the sweet-sour flavors. Ingredients: 2 tablespoons each of fresh parsley, chives, chervil, and coriander. 1 shallot, minced. 1 teaspoon pimento. Sprinkle of cayenne pepper. 1 tablespoon olive oil. 10 eggs. 2 tablespoons water. Salt and freshly ground pepper. 1 tablespoon butter. 4 tablespoons ricotta or